Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
Welcome back. This is episode 255 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. It is the day after Thanksgiving here in the States. Black Friday, for those of you who are crazy enough to go out and do something like that. And today is the release of From the Vault Transform, which is super awesome, and the Buy a Box promo that they're doing for Ixalan, where you get the super cool exploration, or the treasure chest booster pack, or whatever it's called, that has the super sweet flip card with the map art on the back of it. Pretty cool stuff. So Wizards is doing some pretty neat stuff this year. I know that my brother and I are going to get a booster box of Ixalan so that we can score that pack as well as play around with some cool magic cards. So it's a kind of a late birthday present that my brother's giving me because he's awesome. And I love the From the Vault sets. I always get them regardless of what they are, whether they're like good or not. And this one seems to be pretty good. I mean, getting all those flip cards is going to be pretty fun. So so that's pretty cool. For those of you not in the States and not doing Black Friday, you still have this cool magic product, right, that you can go out and get. So check that out if you feel so inclined. Speaking of which, I know I will be picking up my booster box and my From the Vault Transform from Paragon City Games. I'll be going there for sure to get my stuff. They are a great store. They sponsor the show. They provide the prize support for the monthly giveaway that we do for the patrons, as well as for the Seal League that we do every set. So I'll be over there picking up my stuff. And if you're local to Utah, I suggest that you head on over to Paragon City Games and check out what they have going on. They have events almost every night. You can play some format of Magic over there. You can catch their stream. They have some really good Eternal streams that they put up. And if you're not local, of course, you can always check out ParagonCityGames.com. Now, we have a great guest lined up for us today, and I'm excited to share his story with you. I had a huge aha moment as I interviewed him, and as you listen in, you will hear exactly where and when that is. So stay tuned. Let's dive right in and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I am super pumped to have our guest with us today. Our guest grew up in Bern, Switzerland. At the moment, he is studying civil engineering in Zurich. He's 23 years old and has been playing Magic the Gathering competitively for about 7 years. He enjoys Magic for its complexity and difficulty to master. He has had decent GP results over the past 5 years, culminating in making top 8 at GP Liverpool 2017. Coming to us from Zurich, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Hannes Mach. Hannes, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thanks, and how are you, Sean?
Doing fantastic, thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Sure.
Excellent.
I'm into it.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Hannes, we are going to get him into the Facebook group for the prodigies. So if you're not a member yet, go to mtgpro2.com/Facebook group. You can join there. He is not on Twitter, so the best place to get him will be in the group. So you can ask him a question, say thanks for being on the show, follow up with him there. That would be the best way to get a hold of him. So, Hannes, tell us what you have going on outside of Magic. So we mentioned that you're going to school for civil engineering. So obviously Magic is not, you know, full-time. Are you working as well as that, or is it just school and Magic right now?
It's just school and Magic right now. I'm also playing a lot of football at the moment.
Excellent.
Yeah, get some sports in.
Love it. How long have you been studying civil engineering?
For 3 years now.
So you're almost done?
I'm going to get my bachelor degree in this winter, if everything is going according to plan. And then there's 2 more years to get the master.
Okay. Excellent. Now, why did you choose civil engineering?
It's just I've always been the math type. I always enjoyed math in school. And yeah, it's engineering. It's interesting. It kind of fits me.
Yeah? Excellent. So doing engineering, almost done with the bachelor's degree here pretty soon. And growing up, did you like play games, you know, with your siblings? Was it like a family thing? Like, where did your gaming bug come from?
It was actually almost always just Magic. Mm. I never played like much computer games or anything like that. I got introduced to Magic by a cousin of mine. Yeah. And I've been hooked since.
So Magic has been your gaming experience, pretty much, and that's pretty fun. Introduced by Cousin, and that's a perfect segue because we love to dive into the origin story, the history of our guests. So take us back in time and give us the details. Tell us the story of the first time you ever saw or played with Magic cards.
Ooh, I was pretty young then. It was, just Cousin brought some Magic cards, and I was really into it. He's like 4 years older than me, and yeah, I fell in love really quickly. I think it was a 7th edition starter pack my mom bought me after I got hooked. And yeah, for a little while, everyone in school was playing it. I was like, I don't know, maybe 10 years old or something. Yeah, something around that.
Awesome. So a 7th edition was your first set then, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
A 7th edition, there was like a starter pack, and everyone had like a Visadrix, which was like really bad Magic card, but at the time it was really good. At least it seemed to us. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I mean, everything. Yeah, looking back, we can all identify cards that we thought were amazing that were not. So that's fine. And was it just, I mean, your cousin just came over? Was it for birthday or holiday, or is just a regular visit?
I think it was just for holiday.
Yeah.
I used to live in the mountains in Switzerland. And so, I didn't see my cousin very much. So, yeah, he came once for holiday and brought these Magic cards. And
there it is.
Rest is history.
So, were the cards in English?
The cards were in German.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Very cool.
But I remember the first boost pack I bought was in English, and I got like this really crazy 8 mono rare Scion of Darkness, and I thought like it would be the best Magic card ever printed. Yeah.
I love that. Man, yeah, I love that. I love those stories, and that's so neat. Like when I, you know, as many do, I played Magic early on, fell out for many years. I came back for a little bit, fell out, and then I came back for good several years ago. On that little stint that I came back in was during Future Sight, and I remember opening a booster pack, and the rare was a Chroma's Memorial. And I thought it was the best Magic card ever printed. I'm like, oh my gosh, how can they print this card for 7 mana? It gives all of my creatures, not just one, all of my creatures, 7 abilities. They're crazy, you know, and I just thought it was the best card ever. And then I got some more booster packs. I got another one. So I had a deck that had 2 of Chroma's Memorials in there because it was just the best card ever. And yeah, it's so fun. I was like,
I can totally relate.
That was so fun. So what's been your favorite set since you started playing?
Since I started like drafting regularly with the last set of Alara Reborn. That was when I started drafting regularly, and because drafting is mostly what I do. I think it's Innistrad, the old Innistrad. It was like the best drafting experience I had, like the Spider Spawning deck, the Burning Vengeance deck. Mm. It was all near to my heart.
Love it. So I love asking that question because most times, like you, most people say, oh, well, because I'm a draft player, or you know, because I'm constructed or whatever, and they identify, you know, what their favorite set is, and usually why. And so, for you being a drafter, you really got into Innistrad. Is that right?
Yeah, totally that.
Fun. And so, along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
Ooh, I'm a blue player at heart, so I have to say Days.
Ooh. So, for those of us who don't know, what is it? What does it do? And why do you like Days?
So, it doesn't seem that good at first, but it's for 1 colorless and a blue. A counter spell, it only counters if the other player doesn't pay 1. So, counter target spell unless its cost pays 1. But the neat thing about it is instead of paying its mana cost, you can return an island to your hand, which makes it free. And that's why I like it.
Love it. Especially if you returned a tapped island to your hand.
yeah, that's...
Always nice.
Cool point.
Always nice. Oh, good stuff. So, when you started getting into Magic a little more seriously, maybe you can, you know, tell us that story of how you ramped up. What was an early challenge that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
Yeah, In my play group, I was by far the youngest player. I still am, but at the time I was like 14, 15 years old. And yeah, at the start, everyone was just thinking of me like the little kid that came to play. And so I always wanted to prove myself. And yeah, so the fact that I was very young was, at the start, I had to overcome that and become self-confident, and that isn't really a problem.
So the self-confidence was something that you faced early on?
Yeah, I'd say that.
And how did you address that? How did you overcome that? What was, looking back, what was it that got you from there to where you are now?
I became better. That's most of it. I mean, at the start, when you start playing seriously, you're not that good. Nobody is. And yeah, it took me half a year to catch up with the friends I was playing with. And after that, I think they could see that I'm a good Magic player, despite of my age.
Hmm. So you just kept at it, you just kept playing, and like you said, half a year to a year of just continually playing and not being the best in your group and always being the youngest in your group, and obviously that didn't change with time. And so by constantly exposing yourself to those situations, that confidence grew as you just continued to play, right?
Yeah, exactly that.
Awesome. Excellent. Now, looking back, what have been some of your Magic milestones along the way? So obviously we'll dive into the GP Top 8 here shortly, but kind of leading up to that, what were some times that you look back and say, oh, like, this was a big event for me in your personal Magic growth?
Sure. Of course, the first Magic tournament I played, it was to a giant tournament with my cousin, the one that showed me Magic.
That's fun.
It was, the last set of original Ravnica. Yeah, I don't know what it's called, like Descension maybe.
What was it?
I didn't play much then. Yeah. So it was just one tournament. And then after that, yeah, like I said, Alara Reborn, I started drafting, but didn't go to like the really big tournaments. And maybe some years after, first Swiss Nationals I went to was like probably 2010 or something, 2011, somewhere around that time. That was my first like really competitive Magic tournament. And I was really good at first, and then I just lost out. After that, my first GP was 2011. GP Paris, there was like this big weekend with the Pro Tour and then a Grand Prix right after that. Hmm. So I went there. It was the origin of the Call Blade deck. I don't know if you know it.
I've heard of it.
It was like the best standard deck ever. And that was the beginning of it. That was my first Grand Prix at that weekend. Yeah. My first day two, of course, was probably one of the biggest events for me. It was actually a team event, Team Sealed, in the Netherlands in Utrecht. We started as a team. We started 1-1-1, so one win, one loss, and one draw.
Yeah.
And we had to win out from there. And in the middle of day one, they announced that there were too many teams and that there's another round on day one. You have to win that to go to day two. So
holy
on
cow.
Day one, we went 8-1-1, winning 7 in a row. And it was like the best feeling ever. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. They just added another round because they had to thin the crowd. That's crazy. And you guys made it. You did it anyways. That's cool.
We did it anyways. It was an awesome experience.
That's fun. So when was that? When was your first day two?
I think it must have been like 2014 or something.
Okay.
2013.
Okay.
Somewhere around that time. Yeah. I'm not really sure. I don't have it in my head. And yeah, after that, I kept going to more and more Grand Prix, and I started to do well. The first Grand Prix I played, I never made day two, but off that one day two, I kept on making day two, especially like now you only have to go 6-3
right.
to make day two, which made it a lot easier. And yeah.
That's awesome.
I just play like 4 or 5 Grand Prix a year on Europe, all limited. And yeah, sometimes I do well, sometimes I don't.
All limited. That's interesting. So I guess kind of skipping ahead here then. So you're qualified for the Pro Tour in Spain. Is that right?
Yeah, I was qualified, but unfortunately I do have my exams right then.
Ah.
But so I was able to...
defer it?
Defer it to Richmond.
Okay.
In U.S.
All right, cool. But whether it's Spain or Richmond, Pro Tours have a constructed component to it. And so you only
do
limited Grand Prix. So what's your plan? So obviously the Spain one would have been modern. Richmond, I'm assuming, is standard. I haven't looked at it.
Standard.
But,
yeah, it is standard.
So what's your plan there? How are you going to bridge that gap?
So I'm no stranger to constructed. Limited GPs is where I go to because, yeah, I'm better at limited. I know that. But sometimes I play constructed, mostly if I have to.
Okay.
And, yeah, I think I'll start some months ahead just to, know the format a little bit. I mean, I know that Pro Tour Richmond there will be a lot of rotating going on, so I don't have that much time to prepare because, yeah, there's going to be a new set, and Kaladesh, I think, is going out of standard and something new is coming in. But just, I'm going to play some standard to know the cards, and then the weeks before the Pro Tour, I expect to be playing a lot of constructed.
Mm-hmm.
Just testing all the viable decks and looking what fits my playstyle and what's good.
That's going to be right after, what, Dominaria?
Yeah, I think so.
We have Rivals of Ixalan and then Dominaria, I believe.
Yeah, right.
Neat. So do you have a group that you're going to be playing with for the Pro Tour?
Yeah, Switzerland is like not that large of a country, so... I know most good players in Switzerland. There's my play group in Bern. There's some players I really trust, and I'm going to ask them to test with me. But I'll also ask my other friends in Zurich and around Zurich to help test with me. And I hope together we can bring something viable to standard.
Excellent. Yeah, for sure. Oh, that's so fun. That's absolutely fun. Now, on this journey that you've been through, who have been your Magic mentors? Like, who have you looked up to? Either, players, the big players that we all know or local players that you want to recognize. Like, who have you learned from that stands out to you?
So, first of all, my whole play group in Bern has, like, been really awesome. At some point, I think we were, like, one of the best drafters in Switzerland. Some of these guys, I don't want to mention all of them, but especially Mark Schwass, he's a former Swiss champion and a Swiss national champion, and he was the one who introduced me to drafting and like taught me all the important things like mana curve and what to do with information, that removal is good, that auras are bad, but things is that.
Awesome. Yeah, it's so fun to realize that, I guess it's really hard to forget, but to realize that Magic is not a lone sport, right? Like, obviously we're always playing with somebody, our opponent, but then there's all these other people that play a huge role in our development, whether it's people that we look up to on the internet and we never actually interact with, or the local heroes that, sit us down and teach us things like that. And so it's always fun to look back and recognize, those who have could have helped. So on your journey, you've had ups and downs, like every Magic player, highs and lows. And we'd love to dive into two moments and learn from both of them. The first one being your worst Magic moment and what you learned from that experience.
It was actually my first big competitive tournament. It was Swiss Nationals, 2010 something. And I was a small kid then, I think 14 years old. And I started out 7-0. I was the only player at 7-0. And there was like these really good Swiss Magic players, Nico Boni, Matthias Künstler, all these like really good guys. And I was the only one at 7-0. And I was feeling over the moon. And then I lost 5 straight, which was very frustrating. But the thing that hurt the most, the final loss that knocked me out of top 8 contention, was a game loss. I got a game loss for drawing an extra card. At the moment, it was feeling so unfair. It was my opponent had made a gesture that I interpreted as saying go, like you do at Friday Night Magic.
Mm-hmm.
And I untapped, drew my card, and he was like, wait, I didn't pass the turn. And I was like, you made the gesture. It's my turn now. And then we called the judge, and the judge gave me a game loss for drawing extra cards.
Oh, no.
And it was really tough. The funny thing actually is, a year later or so, it was the Grand Prix Utrecht. And we played like this really good Italian team with Samuele Estrati. And the exactly same thing happened to him. I was playing him and I moved to my teammate, said Evo, and he understood go. Untapped, drew a card. And the judge barely gave him a warning, which I think is correct. But it was really funny at that time that I got this heartbreaking game loss, and then at the Grand Prix, at the big scene, it just was a warning.
Interesting. I don't know. Had the rules developed over, like, in that year, or is it just kind of up to the judge's interpretation? Like, why do you think that is?
So I think it was according to the rules back then. I think there was a change back in back then. They really wanted to punish drawing extra cards, because that's something some people had been cheating with.
Got it.
And I think it changed, but I also think that it's very much up to the judge's interpretation, because he should have never given me a game loss back then. It was completely unnecessary, because everything was on the table. There was no, I couldn't cheat anyway. It was a bit frustrating.
I bet. And then obviously, super tough as a 14-year-old doing really well, and then to lose in that manner, to not lose because of the gameplay, but because of a mistake like that. So I'm sure the rules had evolved somehow, because the judges are, they're trained, and it's pretty uniform where you go. They can't have, interpretation mistakes or whatever. So I just wonder
the background was. Yeah, and I do have to say, it was like the only moment when a judge really did something I didn't understand.
Uh-huh.
Ever since, the judges have been really, really up to their level, and also really friendly, really nice, and just helping the players.
So what was your biggest takeaway looking back on that moment? Your toughest time, your worst Magic moment. What did you learn? Now that we're several years separated from it, and what can you share with us as a takeaway?
So, the most important thing is that losing is okay. At the moment, it didn't feel okay. It felt like this shouldn't be happening. But what I learned is that Magic's still just a game. even if it was that heartbreaking loss, it's still just a game. Like, nobody died. And yeah, so just don't put too much pressure in that one win or that one loss.
Yeah, I think that's it. Very mature outlook on life, you know, to realize that even at the high stakes, even at the big tables, you know, Magic is still a game. And if you remove some of that pressure, then the highs and lows, the wins and losses become a little bit more bearable. So that's cool.
And I mean, I'm not that good with that nowadays. I mean, whenever I play a Grand Prix, like the round that eliminates me from top eight is always the toughest. I have to say, I was in Liverpool, where my top eight, my winning in, I played against a British guy, and he lost quickly, but he was totally okay with it, and I was really impressed.
Wow. Yeah, it's so, yeah, again, the Magic is not a lone sport thing, right? And we always get to interact and learn from other people's and from other people, and sometimes it's, oftentimes it's our opponents, whether things that we don't want to do that they have done, or things that we do want to things that we do want to do that we respect from them, and that actually leads right into the flip side of the coin from our lows, our highs. So, what has been your proudest Magic moment to date?
You might think it's my Grand Prix top eight, but I think it's my first day too. It was there in Utrecht with my team. It was the best feeling ever. I was feeling over the moon. I had never made day two of the Grand Prix. I never even got close. And then we just kept on winning. We played great and felt awesome. And like the tournament was very badly organized. So we were playing from 10 o'clock until midnight.
Oh my gosh.
It was like this huge roller coaster. It was great.
It was great. And that was the Team GP. And together you guys, and I love that you mentioned the story. You started 1-1-1 and then just rolled the rest of the first day going 8-1-1 and making it to day two.
Yeah, that was something.
That's a lot of fun. So what did you learn from there, for that experience?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, before achieving something, it always seems very surreal. And when you achieve it, it feels like, okay, that's something people do. That's something, anyone can manage. So, yeah, before, when I started playing my first Grand Prix, like, day two was so far away. And then as you get better, and then suddenly you realize, day two, that's something I can do. That's something other people make, and they aren't that much better than me. And it's been the same experience for the day two. It's been the same experience for the Grand Prix top eight. It's just, yeah, you can do it. It takes luck, it takes skill, but everyone who signs up for a Magic tournament can win it.
Yeah, love it. Now, I want to dive into how you prepare for events. We'll talk specifically limited, but before I do want to say to our listeners who are brand new to Magic, for example, just started playing, you know, recently. What would you say, looking back on your experience, is something that new players can do to kind of, you know, shortcut or get better faster? So looking back and on your growth and your experience, what can you share specifically for our new players that may have helped you or you wish you had when you were a brand new Magic player?
So there's lots of strategic advice, of course, but I think the most important thing is that there's lots of great content out there. Just something like Channel Fireball, for example, but also other things. For example, for beginners, I think the Limited Resources podcast is really good. And there's just so much out there. You can go take it. You can watch some videos from the best players in the world. I think this really helps understand the intricacies of the game.
Cool. Cool. So stay up on the resources that are available to us. Channel Fireball,
yeah.
Videos from streamers, and limited resources are three that you mentioned. So
awesome. There's not like a really big like shortcut you can take.
Right.
I at least think so. And there's so much content out there that if you want to get better, I think you can get better. It takes time and it takes practice, but you can do it.
Yeah. Cool. So then when it comes to preparing for a tournament, and let's focus in on limited since that's your bread and butter.
Sure.
What do you do? How do you prepare for a limited event? And like, how far out are you practicing? What are you looking for? So walk us through the process of, you know, what does Hannes do to prepare for a limited event?
So I'm mainly a Magic online player right now. And therefore, I prepare mostly on Magic online. So when there's Grand Prix, when new sets come out, I do a pre-release, and I do a draft maybe in real life, and then the set comes out on MTGO, and I start drafting, just to get in touch with the cards, and to know the set, like the combat tricks and stuff like that, and then when there's a specific Grand Prix. I start to do sealed because, as you might know, on a limited Grand Prix, first day is just sealed, 9 rounds of sealed. And drafting and sealed isn't like the same thing, so I start to do a lot of seals. I prefer drafts, but to prepare, I do lots of seals. And yeah, I figure out what fits me best, what's the best overall, what are the decks looking like that you can expect to be facing. I discuss with my friends. I do play a lot of Magic online over Skype with a friend of mine.
Okay.
And this helps me, structure my thoughts because the best thing about Magic is just talking about Magic and. If there's someone that's listening and giving you advice, that's better than just playing by yourself, I think.
And so, what are you looking for? What are some of the things that you're looking for as you are drafting a set or playing sealed with a set?
So, yeah, I'm figuring out how aggressive this set. So, if I'm playing a deck, do I have to worry about my curve? Do I have to worry that on turn 4, my opponent's got 3 creatures out. There's been set with that's true, and then you have to build your deck accordingly. So you have to plan ahead. You have to put 2 drops in your deck. You have to prioritize cheap removal. And you can't have too many cards in your deck that don't affect the board. Something that only draws cards or something similar like that.
Mm-hmm.
But there are also other sets that are slower, where you can afford to not play too many 2 drops, where it's more about the card advantage, like that you can prioritize the removal that handles everything, so when your opponent draws their 1 bomb, you can handle it.
Mm.
So it's a lot about the speed of the format. It's also about which decks are viable. Normally, every 2 color combination is viable, but there's always exceptions. For example, if you draft in your recent set Ixalan, there's blue-white and green-black, which aren't really supported by a tribe. And therefore, it's riskier to go into one of these color combinations. And you have to know that before you play Grand Prix or something.
Yeah, for sure.
Similar.
And that's perfect. I love talking about, currently what's going on. So you just mentioned blue, white, and green, black, you said. What are some other insights you have for the current set, Ixalan?
I think the gig is up, but auras are really good in this current draft format. Normally, like for the past, since I was playing, auras were considered bad because
mm-hmm.
if you put an aura on your creature and your opponent destroys it, you got 2-4-1, and that's really bad for you. You lost card advantage, and you lost tempo. And these are among the most important things in draft, tempo and card advantage. But in this Ixalan, the auras are very good because removal is clunky, and therefore it costs like 5 mana or 4 mana. And so if you get your aura down before that, you can get in a lot of damage before your creature gets handled. So the aura has just been worth like 8 points of damage, which is a fine deal for you.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Or what enhances that is that there are some protection spells in Ixalan. The dive down, it's a trick for 1 blue mana, and it gives the creature +0/+3 in hexproof. So if you put like a 1 with the wind on a random 2/2, it becomes a 4/4 flyer. Your opponent tries to kill it, and you save it. That's a great deal for you.
Excellent. I was going to say, why is it? Why the flip? Why are auras so good? And you mentioned because the removal is clunky?
Yeah, there is one other thing. In Ixalan, most creatures are small. There's lots of 2/2s, 2/1s, and around that area, yeah. And these creatures tend to get worse the later the game goes. So on turn 7, a 2/1 isn't really a good card because your opponent has had much mana, has had much time, so he's played a bigger creature, so you can neither attack nor can you block. And if you've got an aura, you can enhance that creature. If you put a 1 with the wind on a random 2/1, it becomes a 4/3 flyer, which is a really potent card. So, yeah, it's not that much of a risk to put a 1 with the wind on a bad creature. It's much more of a risk to put it on a good creature. And because there are many bad creatures in Ixalan, or small creatures, yeah, it makes the auras better.
Love in my opinion. Yeah, good stuff. What would you say is an underplayed card right now, one that isn't, you know, getting the love it deserves?
So I don't know if you guess it, but 1 with the wind and dive down are like the pillar stone of this format, I think.
Okay.
And maybe you know it already, then good for you. But I can only say 1 with the wind is one of the, in my opinion, one of the best commons in this draft format. Normally, this card wouldn't be very good, but at the moment, I'm picking it very high over the like premium common removals like Vanquish the Weak, which kills a creature with power 3 or less. In any normal draft format, that card would be much better than 1 with the wind, but in this draft format, I prefer the aura because it gives so many free wins.
Interesting. Very, very cool. Now, we've been in Ixalan for several weeks now, obviously, and we had the Pro Tour and everything, and Rivals still doesn't even come out until January. So are you still drafting Ixalan strong? Is it, you know, a pretty deep set for you, or are you going to be doing, you know, limited with, like, Iconic Masters or, you know, kind of looking for something else these last few weeks?
I'm definitely looking for something else because Ixalan is fun, but I think it's only fun for like the first few drafts you do. In my case, that's like, it was really fun for the first 50 drafts I did, but after that, it just felt a bit repetitive. And yeah, now I'm drafting lots of Iconic Masters on Magic Online, which is,
how's that?
It's a very different experience. I think it's more difficult than Ixalan. And if you want an underrated card from this set, I think it's all the 2-mana ramp spells. There's lots of artifacts that tap for 1 colorless mana, like Mind Stone or Chromatic something. I don't remember the name. And these are very good.
Cool.
And there's lots of them, so you can really draft a deck packed of 7 drops and expect to get there because there's these good ramp spells.
Cool. Very cool. Fun. So now, as you have played, you know, Magic, and you, all over the world pretty much, and seen a lot of different players and how they interact with the game, what is the biggest mistake that you see players make?
I think there's lots of mistakes that relate to a player's level. So, for example, a newer player doesn't know the basic rules of limited in my case. So for example, he puts in their deck a bunch of 1-mana 1/1s without abilities and expects them to be good, or prioritizes very expensive cards like the Brontodon in Ixon, the 8-mana 9/9, because they look good at first, but when you play some games, you realize 8-mana, you never get there, and 1-mana 1/1 without abilities gets blanked by other creatures very, very early.
Yeah.
But as people get better, there are other mistakes they make. So, for example, if you're a good player and you know the ins and outs of your draft format and things, then you really get into the gameplay, and a mistake people make there, I think, is they only tend to play the game on out of their perspective. So they see, okay, I've got a removal spell, or I've got a trick, and my opponent, he's got mana open, and maybe also he has a removal spell and has a trick, but what they don't think about is that their opponent is also a human being who makes the same calculations that you do. So, for example, my opponent just tapped out, played a good 5-drop, like 5-mana 4/4 with some special ability, and I've just got a random 2/2. I'm attacking every time because my opponent is just thinking the same way that I am. Oh, my... He can have a removal spell. Hmm. He can have a trick. So I won't block because my 4/4 is very valuable, and these 2 damage, I can afford to take these 2 damage. So he takes the 2 damage even if I do not have a combat trick. So
that's huge right there. Like, because I do that or don't do that. Like, you know, I'm playing, and in my head, I'm thinking all these things like, oh, he's going to have this. Like, I'm like, it makes me probably more cautious than I should be. I know that I definitely suffer from that, being more cautious than I should be in Magic games. But you're right. Like, I never think, I never go through the process and realize that my opponent is doing the same thing. That they're human, that are making the same evaluations, the same calculations, and that they're thinking, oh, like, he has this, he has that. I've heard that before, but the way that you put it, it's just like, oh, yeah, like, I do that. Like, I've seen that in me, and I don't think that my opponent is thinking what I'm thinking and or going through that same amount of emotions. And so I give away a lot. And so that's huge what you just said, I feel.
But I think that's a tip for a very experienced player, because if you tell exactly that to a newer player, it's too much. They can't focus on what they're playing, what their opponent is playing, what their opponent is thinking. So to get to that level, you have to have played a lot of Magic, so you don't have to think about everything all the time, and then you can focus on these intricacies.
Mm-hmm. That's huge, man. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I'm keeping notes because that's really good. So what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Oh, lots of things. The most important thing is that I don't get frustrated over things I don't have any control over, or at least not too much. So a lesson I learned in Magic is that, variance is part of the game, and you're going to lose a lot of matches. Even though you're the better player, it just happens. But real life is like sometimes the same thing. Like, you miss a bus by 30 seconds and you think, why me? And the truth is, you missed the bus probably exactly the amount of time you should be missing the bus, and you shouldn't get hung over it.
I love that. That's a good perspective to have. What growth have you experienced in yourself? Like, what have you learned about yourself through playing Magic?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a difficult question. I think one thing is that I can achieve if I work, I can achieve something. I can get better at something if I want to get better. Like this inherent way of thinking, if I do something, I get rewarded. And Magic isn't always like that, but over the long term, I think you can see how you get better, and you can totally relate to the time and the effort you put into it. So, I learned from myself. If I want to do something, I can do it.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And as a Magic player, what are some of your shortcomings? What are you working on to improve?
Oh, there's lots. One thing I'm trying to improve is playing slower. I'm a very intuitive player, and I make many actions that I take just out of intuition and because I know it's right. But sometimes I miss a line of play because I'm playing too fast. I'm just making the normal plays instead of thinking, okay, what's really going to happen? And just take a moment and think, okay, he's got 3 cards in hand, and if I do this right now, I can get in for 8 damage and then 6 damage on the next turn. Ah, that's lethal. Maybe I should make that play instead of the normal play. Mm-hmm. And there's really some friends of mine that are really good with that, better than me, and that's where I try to look at.
Excellent. And do you do anything on a daily basis, either Magic related or not, that you feel contributes to your success as a Magic player?
On a daily basis, no, not really. I think I try to do a little bit of sport because if I play too much Magic all the time, then it seems to get too tense. Mm-hmm. So sports is a good stress release for me. And there can be other things. And I'm studying and playing Magic. These are like 2 things that really pick my brain.
Yep, a lot of mental energy.
A lot of mental energy, and it's good to have like something other than that.
Something physical.
Something physical.
Love it. That's good. Now, as far as resources go, you mentioned Shadow Fireball, limited resources. We're going to link to those in the notes. Are there any other resources that you turn to when you're keeping your finger on the pulse of Magic?
So I think, everyone says it, but the best resource are players that are as into Magic as you are and that you can talk to, because I think I learned most of Magic by talking to other people, and also talking to other people, because if I have to tell someone how I see it, it also makes the picture for me clearer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. And where can we find you in the future? What events do you have coming up?
This weekend, I'm going to GP Lyon. It's in France. It's a team Grand Prix.
Nice.
With the same team I teamed up with so many years ago.
Fun.
Yeah. And I'm going to be enjoying that. And then, you'll see me at lots of team Grand Prix next year, because Wizards is doing their 20-year anniversary Pro Tour. And it's going to be a team Pro Tour. And we're going to try to qualify for that. That's our goal.
Oh, that would be so fun.
Yeah, that would be like the best thing ever with your friends playing a Pro Tour against like these awesome players. It would be an honor.
Very fun. Well, we love cheering on past guests, so we always like to hear what events you have coming up. So you have the Team GP this weekend. When this goes live, it'll actually be this weekend, so that's kind of cool. Obviously, you have your Pro Tour coming up.
Yeah, sure.
Next year, and then the Team Pro Tour as well. So you'll be going to lots of events to make that happen. So super, super fun. Now, I just want to remind the Prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Hannes, the best place to do that will be on Facebook. We're going to get him into the Prodigy Facebook group, and you can join too at mtgpro2.com/Facebook group. Yeah, join the group there, and then you can put a post and tag Hannes in it, ask him a question, say thanks for being on the show. That would be the best place to get a hold of him. So, Hannes, as we close things out, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Just have fun. Play Magic the way you want it to play. So, do what you enjoy most. For me, it's playing competitive. That's what really, really, really gets me. If that's what gets you, do the same. If you like playing something more fun, like EDH or Cube or something in that manner, just do it. It's all a game, and it's there to have fun and not for anything else.
Well, I love that. And Hannes, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to the Multiverse. And thank you so much for your time and for sharing your stories and your experiences with us. I know I had an epiphany, and I'm really grateful you came onto the show. You are a hero among Planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be banished screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Hey, thanks a lot. It's been a blast. Thanks for having me.
Hannes, thank you so much. Episode 255 is awesome because of you. And of course, Prodigies, you can get the show notes at mtgprotuda.com/Hannes Mauch. That's M-A-U-C-H. And you can get the show notes there. That's where we will write down a synopsis of what we talked about. We'll link to any resources that were mentioned. And it's a great place to listen to the episode if you want to just play it from your browser. And again, as we close out, I want to say thank you to Paragon City Games for supporting the show, for being a sponsor. Check out ParagonCityGames.com if you're not local to Utah. You can also check out their streams, which they put up on Twitch regularly. And of course, if you are local, then go to Paragon City Games and play an event there. I know that you're going to love the atmosphere. I know I will be there today for sure to pick up the Ixalan Booster Box and the sweet bonus pack that you get, as well as the From the Vault Transform. So that's going to be pretty fun. And of course, I want to say thank you to the patrons. Patrons, you mean the world to me. Without you, this show would not exist. And I definitely love your support and look forward to giving back each and every month. And I've been putting a lot of thought into the patron program and look forward to announcing some pretty sweet changes coming up to how that's going to be structured and what that looks like. So stay tuned for that. If you're interested in becoming a patron, if you feel like I have earned your support, then you can go to mtgpro2.com/Patreon, where you can learn more about that. And if you do not feel that I've earned your support, then don't go there. I only want your support if you feel like I've earned it. And if I haven't, let me know, because I want to do everything I can to make this podcast worthwhile for you. My goal is to help 1,000 players qualify for the Pro Tour. And so far on record, we have one that I know of, and I'm definitely looking forward to qualifying many more players. So thank you so much for joining me today. Loved doing this show for you. Can't wait to connect with you again next week. Until then, I'm Sean of The Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery. Be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.